Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners, and welcome to the Power Hour with me, Junaid Bayat, covering a lot of education stuff, parenting, as well as coaching and performance. So today, you know, we're going to cover something that's very important, and that is exam taking, right? You know, the matrics are starting their finals, some of them tomorrow, and during this week, a lot of the matric finals will be commencing. So depending on what subjects they are doing. So in this session, what I'm going to cover is I'm going to give you some of the tools and strategies that you will need to ace any exam. You know, how to go about, you know, preparing, tackling, and overcoming some of the common challenges that most students face in the final exam. Now, I know you might be thinking, oh, man, exams is this week. Some of you might be thinking exams is tomorrow for me. Now, the question you might ask is it too late to study? Is it too late to cram? The answer is always no. But we got to be very smart about how we go about it. So when it comes to last-minute studying, the one thing that really trumps everything, and this is a big mistake that most students make. Now, I know I'm talking a little bit more for the matriculants, but this is for even those private schools that exams are starting in a week or 2 weeks, even public schools. I know exams are starting around about the 7th of November. Well, different places, you know, different dates, but even the private schools, some of the private schools are starting this week as well. So this will be for everybody who will be taking exams, but more so for the matriculants. All right, let's dive into some of these last-minute tips and tricks. So, like I was saying, one of the biggest mistakes that most students make when it comes to last-minute learning is they try to memorize as much as they can, okay? So, I'm going to tell you, yeah, you know what? That can help you for a little bit. But the one thing that can, you know, beat or trump memorizing is what we call deep processing of information, okay? So what is deep processing of information? It means you need to basically engage in, you know, with that information. You're deep processing it so it actually sticks. And according to science, it tells us it leads to an increase of 80% in your recall, meaning in remembering this information. So what does this mean? So it means, deep processing means I need to focus on basically three things. I need to understand, right? So understanding is one. I need to understand the concept. Number two, I need to connect, you know, create a link. You know, I mentioned this before, human beings love connection, even in learning. So we need to connect this information. Connect it up so that you can relate it to what you already know. So it's like, you take what you already know and you're building on it. So what happens is when you do this, you're now leading to understanding that concepts or that information that you need to learn. And the last thing is to visualize. You need to visualize. We've spoken many times before about the power of visualization. So you need to visualize and create these mental images. Now what happens is, like I said, when you're forcing the brain to create a picture, an image, or you're visualizing what you are learning, it leads to an increase of 80% again. So what are the three main things that we need to do? Number one, understand the concept. Number two, connect it up with what I already know, right? And the third thing is you now also visualize it, create a mental picture, use your imagination. And you can add one more bonus to that. It just came to my mind now. Make the information as personal as possible, meaning that how have I experienced this in my life? Have I come across it personally? So any personal experiences to that information is going to help you big time. Okay, so now let's talk about actual exams, right? When you get to the exam room, how do I go about? When I get to the exam room, how do I actually tackle the exam? You know, we need to have what we call exam strategy, all right? So first things first, you need to calm yourself down. You need to basically chill, you know, be very chill and relax. And how do we do that? To relax yourself is you, first of all, you read, basically, you can read any of the surahs that you want, read some of the wazifas, read some du'as, okay? You talk to Allah, it'll calm you down. The Quran is a shifa. So read a little bit of Quran, read Ayat al-Kursi, and then now you take some deep breath, and you're going to tell yourself, I got this. I am prepared. Everything I have studied for is in this paper, and I am very well prepared. So the first step is to calm ourselves down, right? And how do we calm ourselves down? Is I need to read a little bit of Quran, read some dua, reach out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. First thing. The second thing you now need to do is to calm yourself down, right? And we do that by breathing. Deep breath. And what you can do also is in this breathing, you can get yourself into what we call the learning state or the alpha state. The alpha state is the state that is best conducive for learning of any information, anything, right? Not just schoolwork, but learning of anything. So when you're like in the zone, in the mood. Now, why I tell you to do this is, you remember that some students, sometimes it takes them a little while to get into exam mode. You're in the exam. The time has started. And the brain is just not functioning. You know, you're just not getting. That's why I say it takes the brain, you know, a good few minutes, sometimes up to 20 minutes to get into gear, to start answering, problem solving, thinking, you know. So give yourself this head start by doing these few things that I tell you, and you'll already get, you know, you'll hit the road running. Okay. So now you got, you know, you're in the exam room, you've calmed yourself down, you've told yourself you've got this. The next thing that you got to do is now when they hand you the paper is to now preview, right? Basically going through all of the different types of, you know, questions that are there, looking for things that you are familiar with and things that's going to help you to answer those questions. So it's basically, I'm going through the paper and everybody, whether you're in grade 4, whether you're in grade 12, whether you're in grade 7, whether you're in university, you always get this first, you know, you get that 10 minutes of review, sometimes 15 minutes of reviewing. So I always say, we got to be strategic about this time. So in this time, look for all the answers that you know. Look for questions that you already know the answers to. Why? Why do we have to do this? Well, you know, I'm going to play out two scenarios for you, right? And the first scenario is if you just go normally, how most people just tackle an exam is they start 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, right? That's normally how they go. And the other one is to go with what I'm going to teach you here is to go with a strategy, right? And the strategy is answering what I already know. Okay, so the first scenario is what most people do, and that is, they will, you know, after reviewing, the examiner or the invigilator says, right, you can start writing. And they start immediately. 1.1. Okay, answer. 1.2. Answer. 1.3. Answer. 1.4. Okay, I'm not sure about this. Let's skip it. 1.5. Okay. Oh, gosh. What do I do here? Not sure. Again, skip it. Now, in the first 5 minutes, already you have one or two that you have to skip. One or two questions that I don't know the answer to. And in exam, the general rule we say is the first 5 minutes of a test or an exam will determine how good you do, how well you perform. So that first 5 minutes is actually setting the tone for the entire exam. So if we look at that first scenario, right? Where you went in order 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, missed out 1.4, didn't know what's going on 1.5, left it blank, left the next one blank, or even in between you answered in some way here and there. In the first 5 minutes, you had at least one or two or even three or four blanks. Now the mind goes, oh my gosh, this looks like it's going to be a very hard paper. And your mind will make it hard because now that's already, it's presupposed in the brain. that this is going to be a hard paper, so the entire paper becomes hard. Now, if you look at the other scenario, right, and I told you, in the review period, strategize. Look for questions that you already know the answer to. Now, you already identified several different questions that you already know the answer to in your review period, the 10 minutes of reviewing. Now, when the invigilator, the examiner says, okay, begin writing, and you don't start 1.1, you go, okay, 2.7, I know that answer, right? 3.1, I know that answer. 5.4, I know that answer. 1.2, 1.3. And you're going with what you know. We're just tricking the brain into thinking that, okay, this is not too bad, man. I've answered a lot of questions here. It seems like it's going to be a good test. It seems like it's going to be a good paper. So we need to be able to use that as an advantage. Use it as your launch pad, right? You're going to launch off and set the tone for that entire paper. Matrix, remember, your papers are 3 hours. So you've got to be focused for the next 3 hours. You've got to be highly, highly focused. And you've got to pay attention, right? We cannot be distracted. So make sure you're not being distracted by, I heard this week, that you're not distracted by somebody next to you who's maybe clicking their pen, who's scribbling on their piece of paper, somebody tapping the desk, you know, or tapping their foot on the ground. Make sure you are able to go into deep internal focus, that you blank out all the outside sound. Okay? All right. So now we know about the strategies. Let's look at, you know, how to get started as well in terms of a plan. So in terms of the plan, we need to know the most important thing about your plan is timing. How much of time am I, you know, going to need for the different types of questions? So again, the general rule of thumb is 1 minute, one mark. So if a question is 2 marks, you know you got to spend 2 minutes on it, nothing more. Okay? Now you need to mark out, for example, also, where should I be at the halfway point? At halfway mark, where should I be? So if it's a 3-hour paper, that means after 90 minutes, halfway, I need to have answered half of the question. And I need to have achieved half of the marks as well. So if it's a 100 marks, you need to have finished 50 marks by the halfway stage. So you need to mark out, and remember, your examiners, your invigilators, they will help you with this. They'll have it on the board. Every 30 minutes or every 15 minutes, they will strike out. They will tell you how much of time is remaining. So make sure that you stick to the general rule, 1 minute, one mark, and you calculate your halfway point. Where should I be at halfway point? And then after that, you calculate, you'll need to know also, where should I be by the three quarter mark, okay? So the last part is about giving yourself at least 10 minutes, a minimum of 10 minutes to go over all the answers. You know, maybe you left blanks, but just to go through the paper, because sometimes maybe, you know, you just wrote something wrong, or maybe the answer was 1.56 and you put down 15.6, so you just got that point one space off. That's a mistake. That's what your 10 minutes is to actually review and go through your papers. Now, a lot of high flyers, you know, you'll find that we tend to finish papers very quickly and we don't check. We don't check and we lose a lot of marks, silly marks. So make sure you strategize and you plan out time, at least minimum 10 minutes, so that you can go over to see, you know, see where maybe did I make a mistake? Did I spell something incorrectly? Is there anything that, you know, I could have maybe answered it differently? Maybe now I know the correct answer. So you need to know how to tackle that. Okay, now let's start covering some of the exam questions. Okay, now multiple choice questions is the most common questions. We call them MCQs, right? Multiple choice questions. You're going to be using multiple choice questions for the rest of your life. even after high school, at university level, even if you become a doctor, even if you become an IT engineer, right? You finish, you qualified as a doctor. When you go and do upgrades and you're updating your knowledge, the exams are majority of the time in multiple choice questions. So if you can learn how to master multiple choice questions from an early stage, it will give you a good way of tackling multiple. You'll get very good at tackling multiple choice questions later in your life as well. So let's talk about some of the strategies that we can take for multiple choice questions. The first one is, I always tell people you must use what I call the one hand method. One hand is, I cover all the answers with my one hand. I read the question, and then from my knowledge answer. So when I know the answer, okay, this is the answer. This is X, Y, and Z is the answer. Now I look at the options, the A, B, C, and D, and see, right, where's this X, Y? Oh, there's it there, C. Now you mark out C, okay? So you know you got the correct answer. The second strategy to use for multiple choice questions is about elimination, process of elimination. And, you know, it really narrows things down. Now, this is when you don't know the answer, right? And you're still trying to figure it out, because remember, in the multiple choice, they're kind of very close and they all seem to be kind of right. So very often, they might be similar, they might be opposite, the words might, look the same. Just don't get caught up with all of those tricks, because that's what it's there for, okay? So one of them is always correct, and the best way is to eliminate, right? Eliminate, process of elimination, mark out the ones that are totally incorrect. You know it's not there. So very often, from the four, two will be totally, completely wrong, out. Doesn't even need to be there. And generally, the third one is very similar to the correct answer. It'll either be opposite of what the correct answer is, or it's going to be very similar to what the correct answer is. And then you can make a choice from there. The third strategy to take when looking to answer multiple choice questions is basically to go and look at other questions in the paper. And very often, you're going to find that the answers are going to be there. You'll find it in other questions, okay? So be prepared that, yes, when I look for, when I don't know an answer to a multiple choice question, I can look at other questions in the paper, look at other places, and you'll find the answer very often. But remember, the golden rule is 1 minute, one mark. So very often in multiple choice, it's either one mark per question or maximum 2 marks. It never, ever goes more than that. So make sure you're not spending more time than what is allocated for that question. Okay. Taking it a little further, the last one the fourth thing that you can do for multiple choice question is, if you still don't know the answer, the best way is to rephrase the question in your own words. Rephrase it, say it out, read it out loudly in your own words. And the second thing that you can do is, if I still don't know the answer, circle the keywords, right? Circle the keywords for any other, maybe weird, complicated words that are in the question. So when you circle it, it can maybe, you can now brainstorm it and then check out if you can come up with an answer. Okay. And finally, if you have to guess, if you have to take a guess, now I have no idea, I left it blank, and I'm coming back right at the end to check, and this is a multiple choice question, I now just need to take a guess of one of which of the four, because I couldn't eliminate any, I really don't know. Well, based on analysis, right, analyzing data of multiple choice questions in high school, in South Africa specifically, especially the NSC exam and the IEB exam, what I have found from the data over the last 10 years, from 2013 to the end of 2023, if you have to guess, right, B is the correct answer 40% of the time. So if you have to take a guess and you have no idea, if you select B, you have a 40% chance of getting that right. and C is correct 30% of the time. So already, if you choose B or C, right, you have 40% and 30% respectively, higher chances of getting it correct. And just by sticking to those two alone, B and C, you have a 70% chance of getting it correct. So that last resort, if I have to take a guess or make a guess about it. All right. So now we're going to go and tackle some of the other types of questions that you're going to encounter and the types of questions you're going to get. One of the most common ones that you're going to get are also what I call short answers, right? Short answer questions. So what is a short answer question and how do I tackle it? So in a short answer question, it basically, it needs you to be very concise. It needs you to be very, what's the right word to use? It needs you to be very, it's a short answer, right? So mainly the big mistake students make here is when it comes to short answer questions, is they tend to write too much. They tend to write to, the word I was using for is you need to summarize. You need to have a very, a summarized answer. So what you normally would have, now you summarize it and you just put that. And basically in a short answer question, you just have key points. You will answer by key points, right? When you are answering a short answer question, you want to be direct. And like I said earlier on, avoid writing any unnecessary details trying to explain yourself. So again, be very clear and concise in the wordings that you use and ensure that your answer is simple and easy to understand, right? When you're studying and practicing short answer questions, practice summarizing or chunking of information. If you can practice how to summarize information, how to chunk the information, and how to extract the key points and key concepts, you'll be able to answer short answer questions very well. So the other way to get, to do well in a short answer question is practice. The more practice examples, the more exam questions I answer of short answer questions, the better I will become with it. Okay, so that was a little bit about short answers. And you're going to get these short answers. You're always going to get them at least one or two words, sometimes three words at most, right? And it's going to carry at least 5 to 10 marks for the entire paper. Then we get matching questions, right? Now you'll always get matching questions. So what happens in a matching question, generally, these questions basically will give you two or three lists. Right. Actually, it's not three. It's just they'll give you two lists of items or words that they want you to match. It needs to be matched correctly. Okay. Now, when it comes to answering matching questions, how do you prepare for this? How do I study for it first, and then how do I answer it? So, how to answer it first is basically I must identify anything that's obvious in the answer. This is a simple shape because you're going to get two, three that are very simple and easy, right? So identify which one of those and then match it. Then you also want to read very carefully after that, after you've made the simple ones, you know, right? Now you're left with the ones that are a little bit more complicated, a little bit more harder. How do I tackle those? Read through the list very carefully and then see how close you can match them to something. When you match it, right, and remember these are the ones that you didn't know, you've already answered the ones that you know. See if it doesn't match somewhere else as well, okay? And this is how now you can also use, like we use in MCQs, the process of elimination to narrow it down for yourself. So make sure you use these strategies of tackling matching questions. Now, to learn for matching questions, I like to tell people, even matriculants, use flashcards. It will help you create these links and associations very easily with concepts, right? So it creates links. Automatically, because remember your flashcard has, for example, a concept on the front, and on the back, it has the definition, the explanation, right? You can even create a flashcard on your devices. There are a lot of apps now that help you create flashcards. So use flashcards, because what I have found with my students over the years is that flashcards is one of the best ways to prepare for matching questions. Then you have the simple one where we know the kinesthetic learners love this one, and that is fill in the blank, okay? And fill in the blank questions you're going to get in every single paper, right? Especially now in school, you must get fill in the blank. I always tell students, fill in the blank for you to score easy marks, right? You want to get easy marks, you learn how to answer all the fill in the blank questions. So they want you basically to complete a sentence, maybe a phrase, right? And how you do that is by filling in the words that are missing, right? Now, how do you tackle this? Read the sentence or the phrase very carefully, because very often they will play with words. Now you look at the grammar and the structure of the word, because sometimes, I'll give you an example. They might have, like, if there's an and then it's a blank. Now, automatically, when you see the word and, you know, okay, that means the next word starts with a vowel. So your answer is going to be a letter, a word that starts with a vowel. Okay? So look at the grammar and the structure of the sentence or the phrase. It will help you very often to be able to answer it. If you are unsure about it, look in other questions again, just like multiple choice, to fill in the blanks. Look in other questions in the paper. You most often will find the answer somewhere. Okay, now how do you prepare for fill-in-the-blank questions? Fill-in-the-blank questions, very often, it's going to be like definitions. It's going to be a full concept. So when you are studying or when you are doing revision, review all the key points, key concepts, key terms, definitions, all of these things, right? You want to study and review them. That will help you to answer fill in the blank questions. And then also, when you're practicing, right, to practice for fill in the blank, if you have a passage, right, you can take the passage and then just put on, you know, important sentences from the passage. Choose in each passage, choose at least 5 to 10. Then you make at least 5 to 10 copies of that you made. And from the 5 to 10 copies, each copy, you know, mark out different words. Mark out, blank out different words. And then you come at a later stage. Maybe you did this all in the morning to prepare. And in the evening now, you go and tackle them. Tackle them differently at different times. Because remember, all have different answers you've marked out. So you can practice like that by preparing some of these fill-in-the-blanks, by making out these phrases and sentences and blanking out certain words. You can get somebody else to do it for you as well. Okay, number four, the fourth type of questions that you're going to come across are labeling or diagrams that need to be labeled. This means these questions are, they wanting you to label a part of a diagram or to even complete the full diagram, okay? With the matrix, you know, when you're writing your bio and stuff, structure of the ear, the heart, all of that. So you're going to have lots of diagrams that you need to be able to label, right? Part of the diagram, or sometimes the entire complete diagram. Now, how do you tackle this in the exam? Make sure you study that diagram very, very carefully. And the first thing you need to do is identify what are the key features of the diagram. Then the second part of answering and tackling a labeling question, right, is to remember what are the important information from when you were revising and doing revision, right? What are some of the important things that I need to put onto the diagram? And just like math, sometimes in your fourth, you know, level four question, you need to have a label to a diagram And that label will actually be extended into another question after that. So make sure we know it very well and we are able to label the diagram accurately. So I generally tell people the moment you have a diagram or you have a diagram that you need to remember, you know very often it's going to come out. The moment you get your paper, write out the labels very quickly. Write it out very quickly. So you can have the labels, and then when you come to that question, you don't need to now struggle. So in the beginning, write out all the diagrams, any concepts, any equations, formulas. Write all of those things down right at the beginning so it can help you better. And also, one of the things that I found with a lot of students is they don't write clearly when it comes to labeling. Now, I don't know whether this is deliberate, but very often you're going to lose marks if it's not something that's clear and it can't be read easily. Okay, so number five, the fifth type of question is basically, I forgot to tell you, how to study, how to learn and revise for these labeling questions is basically to take pictures on your phone of as many of the diagrams and illustrations, right? And keep looking at it on your phone. Because remember, your eye works like a camera, takes pictures constantly. Every single millisecond is taking pictures. So the brain functions in pictures. And what happens is now, if you have these pictures on your phone, it's going to be very easy to remember. It's going to help your memory. So take a lot of pictures and practice labeling diagrams that you know are going to come out, right? And doing it once is not enough. You need to label a diagram at least 3 to 4 times, especially complex diagrams, right? Label it 3 to 4 times at different times and explain in your own words what the different parts that you just put in, the labels, right? And what is the function of that? So if you can explain it, you'll remember it much more easily. And also, create your own diagram, right, to test yourself to see how well you are able to label how well you are able to label these diagrams and answer these labeling questions. So let's move on. What are we doing? We're answering exam questions. We're tackling exam questions to ace any exam. And we now looking at how to tackle all the different types of questions. We've covered multiple choice. We've covered fill in the blanks. We've covered the matching. We've covered labeling. Now we're going on to calculation. So this is mainly your subjects like math, if you're doing chemistry, accounting, where you need to calculate stuff. So there's going to be calculations that need to be done, and you're going to arrive at a certain answer. So the best way to tackle these calculation questions is, number one, you have to know what are the correct formulas or equations that need to be used to make the calculation, right? Like if you're studying in physics, when you're calculating work, energy, all of that, you need to know which are the right and relevant formulas/equations that I need to use to calculate the answers. So that will tell you very clearly that the most important thing is to know my formulas and equations. Which formulas for what and which equations are used for what? Okay, so first part in tackling that question is I need to know which formula, which equation I need to put and apply so that I can answer and formulate the calculation. That's why we call this the calculation question. The second thing about a calculation question is make sure you're showing every step of the process of how you got to the answer, okay? So basically, in simple terms, your teacher will say, show your working very clearly, right? I'm saying demonstrate it step by step, show the process, exactly how you got to it. They must be able to understand it by just looking at all your steps. And then at the end, just double check your calculations to avoid any mistakes, because very often what is used in a calculation question is now you've got to take that answer. And based on that answer, you have to answer other questions. So if you got the first part wrong, the calculation part wrong, now the next part is also going to get wrong, but they most probably will give you marks for process. So they know, okay, you followed the correct process, but because your previous answer was incorrect, they'll give you just part marks for getting the process right, but you will get the wrong answer. So always make sure you double check all these calculations. Now, how can I prepare for, or how do I study, revise for calculation questions? I believe that one, you should actually know all the formulas, write down the formulas and equations that you need to use, master it. And again, just like labeling, when you get your exam paper, one of the first things you want to do is remove from your mental desk all the things that are there, like equations, labels. Write it down immediately, which equations and formulas for what. Some of the exams, nowadays, the formulas and the equations are given to you. But you need to know which one goes where and which one is used for what. So make sure when you're studying, know your formulas and equations. And the best way, again, is to practice calculation-based questions. The more you practice the calculation-based questions, the better you become. More experience you have at it, better you understand your work. And like I said, also show the working. So in your practice, when you're practicing, when you're reviewing and revising for that paper, you know, make sure the process is always correct. Your step, the step-by-step is correct, and double-check your calculations. Okay, number six we're going to go to is what I call contextual questions. Now, these are basically any question that can give you maybe a scenario, a picture, or even a passage, right? And they will ask you to answer questions based on a context. A context is basically a situation. What exactly is going on in that situation? That's what a context stands for. Now, how do we tackle in an exam a context question? Okay. So most important is read the question two times, a minimum of two times. Okay. Read the passage, read the scenario very, very carefully. So here you want to pay attention to any little details that are in the actual context, the passage, right? You want to pay attention to any details that might be there. You can underline keywords if you like, you can circle them, right? Now, use that information to now answer the questions based on the keywords, words that you may have underlined or circled, right? And also, whenever you give an answer with evidence, meaning from the text that has been provided, from the context question that has been provided, you answer the question with evidence from the text. That's very important, so you get full marks. How do I practice studying for contextual questions? Well, here it's about reading as much as you can, reading as many passages or different types of, you know, maybe newspaper articles, maybe magazine articles, anything, right, that can you can read and then basically answer questions based on what you read. Now, you want to actually develop the ability to make, you know, to answer tough, strong, difficult questions, okay? So you want to have that ability to be able to come up with your own conclusions. You sometimes need to, because this is a context, right? You need to be able to look at similarities, or you can even, you know, draw an inference and come to a conclusion from the information. So this requires you to practice a lot of your logical thinking and deductive thinking skills. You need to be able to use deductive thinking, logical thinking, because now you're going to deduce, okay, based on this, the guy was walking, he's most probably going to cross the road, or he's probably going to do that deductive thinking. You need to practice a lot of these kind of questions when you are learning and preparing for it. Okay, let's move on to the next type of question that you're going to encounter. And that is what I call data interpretation. So data interpretation is basically the kind of question that, for example, they might give you a chart, they might give you a graph, They might give you a table, right? And what you've got to do is now you have to analyze, right? Basically, that's why you have to, practice how to analyze and interpret data. This is basically, they can give you a table or they can give you a graph. Sometimes it can be even in a chart format. And now they want you to basically interpret all the data. And they're now going to start asking you questions based on this data that's there. And how do we tackle data interpretation questions in an exam? Okay, in an exam, we need to basically study all the given data, right? We have to study the data and pay attention to the next two words I'm going to use. Look for trends and patterns. Look for trends and patterns. And then use your knowledge. How well you know that information. Use your knowledge, right, to analyze and make up your conclusion, come to your conclusion about the data, right? This is basically interpreting the data so that you can answer. Now, again, I also must highlight this point is, when you give an answer, especially if it's 3 marks, 4 marks, and 5 marks, make sure that your answer is backed up by evidence from the data that's been provided, from the graph, from the table, or from the chart that has been provided to you. You give answers, put evidence from the data that has been provided. So you'll find that bolsters your answer, and you're more likely to get a higher mark, especially when it's 2, 3, 4, 5 marks. When you get those kind of questions, you must use evidence from the data that has been provided. Okay, now this will form also in your math, right? Statistics. You want to understand stats and statistics, their concepts, and basically how to analyze techniques, right? Answers. How to analyze questions so that you can answer them well. This is a little bit about data interpretation. You're always going to get a graph, a chart, even a table. You're going to get these things, and you have to be able to tackle it. Okay, now we're going to move on to number 8, which is true and false questions, right? So this is one a lot of people like, and true and false is also, again, sometimes, they think it's easy, but very often they play with words. So the first one or two will be very simple, but after that, it becomes a little bit more challenging, right? So when you have, for example, a series of numbers, and the highest and lowest numbers will always, most often, be the incorrect answer, right? So in true and false, we also need to look for the kind of words they use in a true and false question. For example, in a statement or a sentence that has words like always, everybody, never, no, every, all, or none in them. They're kind of specific. They're very specific, definitive words. Now, when you get these kind of words in a true or false question, it is most likely going to end up being false because they're using definitive. But if you have the opposite of the definitive, right, and you've got a question with the word or a statement or a phrase with words like often, sometimes, most, many, usually, or few in them, those tend to be true most of the time, okay? Any unfamiliar words or phrases or terms used in the phrase are most probably very incorrect. It's wrong, okay? Then, if you, for example, have in a true and false question, for example, there's negative. You have double negative. You get a negative or a double negative. An example of a negative is, or a double negative is, if I told you, true or false, a cloudy sky is an unclear sky. So it's actually got a negative in there. It's saying a cloudy sky is unclear, which actually means it's cloudy. So the answer is true. Or you might get another type of question in this true and false, right, where it's got double negative. So double negative cancel each other out. If somebody said true or false, he is not unintelligent. Not is the negative. Unintelligent is the second negative. So what does it mean? It actually means he is intelligent. So we got to be very careful for these double negatives in true or false questions. Okay, here to study and prepare for a true or false question, best way is practice and knowing the work solid. When you know the work very well, you'll be able to answer them very, very easily. And the last thing about true and false is you want to see every part of that question must be true. If one thing is not true or incorrect, it becomes false. So every part of the phrase or the sentence has to be correct or true for the answer to be true. If there's five things in there that are correct and one thing is incorrect, then it's false. Okay. Now, in these kind of questions, we want to look for, where you know it's going to be false, when they give you a reason. For example, they'll tell you X, Y, and Z because, or sin, or reason. So when you see words like sin, because, or the reason there, again, it's going to be false. Very often, it's going to be false. Okay. Now we're going to the last part, and that is about writing long answered questions, like, for example, your transactional writing or writing of essays. Okay, so how do we tackle essays, right? Now, I like to call it, that's why I left it for last. An essay is basically testing your depth of knowledge. They want to see how well you understand the concept or how well you understand the topic. And they want to see what is your view and your opinion. Now, we all know how do we write essays. Everybody knows an essay is broken up into three parts, right? Your introduction, which is the first part. And then the actual main part of the essay is what we call the middle or the main section, the body, right? So you got the introduction. Now you got the main section, which is, you can call that the body. And then you got the last part, which is the conclusion, right? So when you answering, you have to use that format. Now, I'm going to give you a secret. So the secret is, I call this my elaborative method of writing essays. You will never be stuck for an idea. Your only limit to this is going to be the word count, the limit of the examiner. That's going to be the only, you're not going to have to be stuck and thinking about ideas. All right. So some general rules about writing essays. In an essay or a long format answer, generally each paragraph must have a minimum of five sentences. A minimum of five sentences. The very first sentence of the paragraph, we call that the topic sentence, right? So when you have a topic sentence, that's your first sentence. Now, whatever you said in the topic sentence, after that, you give a minimum of three reasons, three proofs, or three examples of why you said what you said in the topic sentence, in the first sentence, okay? And why I'm saying a minimum of three. If the word count was, for example, 600, you might have to give five examples or six examples. So depending on the word count, the limitation, right, that's how many examples or proofs or reasons you're going to give in each paragraph. So for this one, now that I'm teaching you how to write it in a simple form using my elaborative method, you're only going to give three reasons, three proofs, so three examples, because we're going to base it on an assumption that the essay is 450 words. Okay, so we've got the first sentence. Whatever we said in the first sentence, now we give three reasons, three proofs, so three examples why I said that. And then now we just need the last question. And the last sentence is a conclusion. So we now, what is a conclusion? A conclusion is basically whatever you said in the topic sentence, you say the exact same thing strategically, meaning you say it differently in different, we're using different words, but you're saying the exact same thing. Okay, so if I were to give you an example of an essay, okay, a simple essay, and let's just say the, so that everybody can understand, even if it's primary school. If the essay question is, write about your favorite pet, your first topic question is going to, topic sentence, the first paragraph is going to start, my favorite pet, and you're going to carry on. My favorite pet is my dog, Romeo. Now, because you gave the topic sentence, whatever you said in the topic sentence, now you need to give three reasons, three proofs, or three examples of why you said that. So it could be, you can say, he is beautiful and easy to care for. Reason number one. Reason number two, playing with him is lots of fun. Reason number three, he always takes care of me. So you gave your topic sentence, right? My favorite pet is my dog, Romeo. And then you gave three reasons, so three proofs, or three examples of why you said that. Now, all we need is a conclusion. So how to conclude that? We say, I never had a better pet. So guess what? We now suddenly have our entire first paragraph, which is your introduction. Now, pay attention, because this introduction is now, that first paragraph, the introduction, is the key to the entire essay, well, the entire body of the essay, okay? So, that first reason that you gave, right, where you said, he is beautiful and easy to care for, that first reason that you gave in the introduction will become the topic sentence of the first paragraph in the body. Okay, so the second paragraph of the entire essay will be, the topic sentence will start off with what was the first reason you gave in the introduction. Okay, the second reason you gave in the introduction, we said playing with him is lots of fun, right? So here, okay, let's just say this is the example I used. My favorite pet is my dog, Romeo. Reason number one, he is beautiful and easy to care for. Reason number two, playing with him is lots of fun. Reason number three, he always takes care of me. So in that first paragraph, that first reason becomes the topic sentence of the paragraph in the body. The second reason you gave, playing with him lots of fun, becomes the topic sentence of the second paragraph in the body. And third reason you gave, he always takes care of me, becomes the topic sentence of the third paragraph in the body. Now, if it was a longer essay, maybe you had, you know, a longer word count, if you got the fourth, fifth, sixth paragraph, like that, each reason you gave in the introduction becomes the topic sentence for each of the paragraphs in the body of the essay. And you remember what's the golden rule? Whatever you say in the topic sentence, you need to give three or four reasons, the minimum of three reasons, three proofs, or three examples why you said that. So this just keeps elaborating and elaborating and elaborating, and you'll have a big, nice essay. Okay, so I hope you understood that well. Some basic rules of essay writing, guys. When you write neatly, you'll score higher marks. Proven, two identical essays, both written, one written neatly, one written untidily, the neatly written one scores a higher mark. Right? So make sure you're writing neatly, because lots of writing, a lot of people don't like writing, and then you start off neat and then it ends up, you know, being untidy. Another very big point in an essay, if or a long answer question, if you couldn't answer it or you didn't have time and the time was up, right? You know, examiner said, all pens down, stop writing. And now you know you didn't finish answering the long answer question or you didn't answer the essay. Write down on your answer sheet, ran out of time, would have answered this essay with the following points, and just put it in point form. You're not going to get full marks, but you're going to get part marks. And this I have got confirmed from a senior examiner who sets out papers and sits with fellow examiners. So write it down. Okay, that's a little bit about essay writing. In terms of, one more big point about the essay. Remember, in all your transactional pieces, they want the draft. So in an essay question, when you're going to get those essay questions, they want to see the draft, okay? Now, I'm going to tell you something that goes against what school teaches you, and I've spoken about this many times, even in front of department officials. Write your essay first, and then when you finish the essay, then write or draw out the mind map. After you've completed writing the essay, now you draw the mind map. Because most people, what we found is, they spend a lot of time on that draft mind map than actually writing the essay. So you're losing marks and you're losing time. So make sure you write the essay first, and then when you're done, now you actually create the mind map. Okay, let's move on to the next type of question that you're going to get. Number 9, and this is again in your long writing, right? Long answer questions, and this is always similar to essays. I'll give you an example, like a letter, writing a letter. Okay, oh my, I'm gone over my time. Okay, very quickly, and I'll round up. In your letter, you're going to use a framework, which I call the 4 P's, and then I'll conclude on this. So the 4 P's, the first P is they want your plan. They want your plan. The second P is now the actual content of the letter, the body of the letter, right? The second P stands for praise. In the introduction of your letter, even if it's a letter of complaint, give praise. This is sometimes, it's never more than 2 to 3 sentences. Now the actual full length of the letter now is the third P, which is problem/project. Problem/project. So you can talk about a problem that you have, or if it's not a letter of complaint, it's not a problem, talk about a project that you're working on. And the fourth P is your conclusion of the letter, that is your proposal, how you would propose to solve this problem or how you propose on moving forward. So I was going to cover a little bit more in depth, but inshallah next time we shall look at it. So that is from me on the Power Hour. Today we covered everything, exam questions, how to tackle the different exam questions. I don't have the time to run through the recap of the 9 main types of questions we had, but I'm sure this will be very helpful to you and how to prepare for these exam types of questions. JazakAllah khair. Allah bless all of you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.